Have you ever covered a carpet stain with a rug, ignored a leaky faucet, pretended your half-painted living room is supposed to look like that? Well, you're not alone. We've all got unfinished home projects, but there's an easier way. When you download Thumbtack, it's easier to care for your home from top to bottom. Pull out your phone and in just a few taps, you can search, chat, and book highly rated pros right in your neighborhood. Plus, you'll know what to tackle next, because Thumbtack is the app that shows you what to do, who to hire, and when. So say goodbye to all those unfinished home projects, and say hello to caring for your home the easier way. Download Thumbtack and start a project today.
VR training platforms, like the one developed by Fundamental VR and Orbis International, are helping surgeons train over and over before operating on real patients.
As you practice each skill, the muscle memory starts to develop.
Learn more at meta.com/metaverseimpact.
We're coming, and we ain't backing down.
We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror.
I'm bitterly disappointed with the officiating today.
Guys being dudes.
And they run through our like through a tin horn, man.
Thank you, Lee. Splits on Duo. I'm a congressional reporter now. I'm a White House correspondent, yes. So I don't even really know why I'm here right now. You know, this is a college football podcast, but, you know, I cover Washington, D.C.
Richard Johnson there. Richard, you ever been to the White House before? First time?
Yeah, first time, long time at the White House, apparently, yesterday. Stephen Godfrey, a D.C. area, born and bred,
there,
Alex
yeah.
Kirshner, yeah. For a long time lived in D.C. Have either of you ever been to the White House? I actually don't know. Have either of you guys
twice.
I have bowled at the bowling alley. Now,
what?
I have sat at the desk behind the Oval Office.
I have not.
And I'm not kidding.
Now,
wait, that's what? All right, time.
Under which administration?
No. One at a time. Alex, when did you bowl at the White House bowling alley?
I bowled freshman year of college because someone on the floor, his dad worked for like the U.S. Trade Representative. So I went bowling. But here's the truth of the matter is, if you've been to the White House bowling alley, you have not necessarily been to the White House. It is in the executive office building, which is in the same complex. Mm-hmm. And it's actually architecturally, yep. Architecture heads will acknowledge it's actually a much nicer building in terms of the design. But it is not technically the White House.
Shout out to the architecture. Actually, Kate from McMansion Hell, she listens. So shout out. She is an architecture head.
Godfrey,
and so Scott, you, Action Cookbook.
Godfrey, you sat at the Resolute desk?
I was 9, 8, I think. So that would have been Bush 1. But I've been during both sides, like, control. My dad has, like, I think it's level 2 clearance at the Pentagon. Had he's retired. And our neighbors across the street in DC or in Northern Virginia, I think at one point the cul-de-sac was like FBI, ATF, Revenue, Secret Service. And so if you go, you do anything in the White House, that's Secret Service. So my dad's family from Georgia came in when I was like a kid to visit. And then my dad surprised them on the FBI tour at the end. If you've ever taken that in the Hoover building, there's a live shooting demonstration at the end inside the building. And he did that. It's behind plexiglass. It shows you all the guns they use to break up the mob in the 30s. And then we went over to the White House and we went Bush 1 was somewhere and like not on the premises. And so we got to go into the Oval and like walk around a little bit and then stood behind the podium at the press briefing thing too, portending what would not that I became a political reporter, but we spent our most time in the press room. Like, so I guess where you were yesterday, right?
Yeah. So I'll say this, and we'll get to the real reason why I was there in a second. I'm not going to go long on that because you really don't care. But the White House briefing room is insanely small.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, so just architecture heads will know. That they like filled in the old White House swimming pool in the 70s and put the press briefing room on top of it. They've renovated it since, but that it's roughly the size of a really big swimming pool. If you want to know like how big it is, it's like 7 or 8 rows deep, like seven mm-hmm. or eight, like movie theater seats across. Maybe movie theater seats is probably
it ain't
generous.
That Delta Comfort Plus. You're in
no,
you're in
baby,
coach.
It ain't. Yeah, it's economy in there. It's not, and then like behind that, there's like the where the cameras are. And then you go behind that, and there's like it's a narrow mm-hmm. hallway. There is a calling it a kitchenette is probably generous. There's like a espresso machine and a fridge, and then there's a couple like booths that I guess like ABC and like Getty Images like have via the like White House, you know, Correspondents Association, whatever. But yeah, this is not, I mean, I've been in the press box in the White House is not exactly the lavish lap of luxury, but
not as roomy as Nebraska's. No, for sure.
But I did get to stand. Yeah. I stood at the desk, or the lectern, I should say, that Biden stands at. That's
did you get
like,
your picture taken?
I did. It's on good. My
send that to mom and them. They love it.
I sure did. It's on my Instagram, RJ_CFB for the plug there. And yeah, well,
he gets an Instagram and now he can't stop promoting. I love it. We love to see it.
Kamala Harris walked by me at one point in time and like, I think you'll kind of appreciate this just because like, you know, the security guys were pretty like, so when I went like to get physically into the White House, there's a perimeter that sometimes is open to the public depending on like who's there or whatever. And then there's like the literal gates to like the actual, like, you know, kind of compound right there. And so to get into the compound, I had to wait on my contact to come from the executive building to like come get me. I had to be escorted around the grounds all day. And like, I'm kind of like standing there waiting, you know, and I'm waiting there for, I'm sure it was like 6 or 7 minutes, but like feels like an eternity when there's a security guard, a Secret Service security guard she was very nice. She's doing her job, asking me a couple times, like, sir. And I'm like, yeah, my contact's like coming. My contact's going to be here. Like, I'm not like,
Standing around. Yeah, they don't like
loitering. They don't like loitering with a backpack and shoulder and a duffel bag standing outside the White House.
No.
But yes, ostensibly while I was there, baby's first college athletics at the White House today. There have been obviously a lot of college athletics hearings on Capitol Hill and in Washington, D.C., but they have not really occurred in the White House proper. Look, long story short, Biden's had some wins on labor in the last few weeks and months. They are trying to build him up on labor. That's why this event happened. They had, what was it, I guess, 6 college football players, all former college football players. One of them played in the FCS. The rest, Ryan Clark and Andrew Luck, were there. By the way, an aside,
Keith Marshall was there. Yeah.
Keith Marshall was there. Former Georgia player Keith Marshall was there. Kevin Negandhi of ESPN was also there. It people always say this about Andrew Luck. Like, that's one of the nicest dudes in his, like, as far as like phenom athlete forever, played in the NFL, has no reason to like be that like personable and affable. Like, yeah, really, really nice dude. I ended up talking with him for like 10 or 15 minutes while we're kind of like waiting around. But Godfrey, you'll like the security guards were all like, pretty normal for the most part. Secret Service, all pretty normal for the most part when we got in. But there was a point in time when Kamala Harris like walked through where we were at to go outside to do a separate like press briefing. And like shit got real for like a 10-minute period, like real quick. It was, sir, you need to stand here. You need to stay there. Yeah. You need to not move. Like it was like, and then she like walks through with her party of aides or what have you. And like, her Secret Service guy, and it's like, you know, you know where you're at. You know, it's serious.
You can
business.
Feel it. Yeah, yeah, you can feel it. Absolutely. Yeah, Secret Service is no joke. I mean, and because all they do is train.
Yeah,
and just run situations, and it's a fascinating thing where they do crowd psychology and positioning, and this is the kind of crap I grew up with, where they talk about that kind of stuff, like, you know, don't box yourself in, watch your pincer, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. One thing about this event that I found notable. And it is just a political event, much like these hearings are when they're on Capitol Hill as opposed to at 1600 Pennsylvania, is that it was a college football event. And it was about...
It was not billed as anything else.
And I think that that is important. It is also important to hear from every other type of college athlete, absolutely. But I think what happens a lot of the time in the congressional hearings is that the NCAA or a conference or the schools handpick witnesses, and the student athletes, that's their term that they bring along, are oftentimes in non-revenue sports. They are oftentimes not the black men who disproportionately make up Division I football, and they pick a set of athletes that kind of sets aside the racial justice part of college football athlete compensation, and that might be on like the student athlete advisory committee, the the athletic directors group chats, like the people who the players who the schools think will provide a very positive, yeah, I love my college athlete experience. I don't want to change a thing type of testimony. And so I think it is good that there was an event that was for the football players in the sport that makes the money and that have lived out careers in this sport and understand how it works for athletes in that sport. I think that was good.
Yeah, and you know, you've got Keith Marshall, who's somebody who sustained a very, very traumatic knee injury. You have Andrew Luck, obviously, whose career ended because of concussions, effectively, in the shoulder, and a bad shoulder. So a lot of the focus was health and safety initiatives. They apparently talked about NIL and revenue sharing sort of at the top line, how much they did, Lord knows, because here's the okey-doke. So, like, I went because, obviously, like, first of all, you get invited to the White House. But also, like, it was like Biden's going to be there, but it's not 100% clear if he's going to speak to us. And then, like, by the way, even the morning of, it was pretty clear that, like, hey, given the, you know, happening in the world, like, he may not show up. You know what I mean? And so Biden may not show up. So what happened was we go in. Me and Seth Emerson of The Athletic, who are the reporters there, we go in, we sit at the roundtable discussion. We were in there for like not even 5 minutes, honestly. And they kick us out. And then they have like a roundtable discussion amongst themselves. And then Biden comes in during that. It was supposed to be a surprise. And it was to them in the room. And then Biden ended up spending way longer than like everybody thought he was going to and ended up taking them all on like a tour of like the Oval Office and like, et cetera, et cetera. So that's kind of like how it went. And like why Biden didn't give us anything or didn't talk, I don't know. But like
It's just a press event. I mean, it's just, look, his poll numbers suck. We're headed into an election year. This is an easy layup. I mean, it's football season. I mean, I saw some conjecture online about, well, this didn't represent women. This didn't represent the full. This was a football event. It was a quick PR thing. This happens all the time, usually across administrations. I mean, Republican administrations do this kind of stuff too all the time. Like, does Biden have a team?
Yes, actually.
The UW Delaware. Blue Hens. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Blue Hens.
And okay, like, not even assuming. Yeah. No bullshit. Like, he's about it, apparently.
So, Alex and I have been around. No, wait. Richard, were you there too at Army Navy with Trumpy?
Yes.
Yeah, so we were there like 20 yards off of him because we were on the sidelines when he came out for the coin toss. But then I was also at another Army Navy game where it was the embed that I did when Army broke the streak, and he had just been elected, and that's the one that I'll never forget because he goes into the box with Vert and Gary, and he's like, "This isn't very good football." That was like his lead line, and I'm just like,
I remember at the time,
that was still you're like, "Holy shit!" Now, of course, we're a nerd to that now, but
now look,
I remember at the time I was standing in the locker room at Army. I was standing in the locker room. There was a two-star general and athletic trainers and like just assistants running around because it was like a minute before the half and I wanted to be in the locker room when they came in. And that's when Trumpito was talking all this shit. And all of them, even the general, just look up when they were like, what the? Like, yeah.
Look,
that's,
man,
my presidential college football moment.
He's a lot of things. Occasionally funny about football is one of those things. Ask Liberty fans as well. He roasted them at their graduation 1 year. I don't like it any more than you do, but it is what it is. Richard, moving on to the big news of the week in college football. You have advanced this Michigan story a few times now. You had the reporting.
Alex, that's not the biggest news in college football this week. The biggest news in college football this week is Split Zone Duo's premium episodes have moved to Substack.
Thank you for catching me.
They've been saying it.
That was good. That was good. Did you guys rehearse that? Or
no? I've seen it on SportsCenter. I've seen it. I went to Times Square. Yeah. It was on a billboard. Like, Split Zone Duo's premium episodes have moved to Substack. Look, we're really excited about this. We have consolidated the monthly price. It's $10 a month. Price of the brick has gone up. Yes, but you get the whole brick for $10 a month. You get a month free if you sign up for an annual.
And you get more. You get newsletters. We've already got one out in the world. We're going to do them regularly. We're going to do a live chat on Saturday in the Substack chat with our friend Jason Kirk. We're going to do all kinds of things that we were not able to do before that we are very excited to be able to do now.
Alex, is that the morning games, right?
Yes, we're going to do those during the 12 Eastern time games.
11 a.m. kickoff, God's time zone, folks. Get in there. We'll be sub-stacking.
Yeah.
Verb.
So that is for paying subscribers. If you were an existing subscriber of ours on Patreon, then you are all set to receive Substack up through December 3rd. But before that time,
old heads,
you will want to re-enter your payment information at splitzoneduo.com/subscribe in order to say subscribe beyond that period of time. And yes, you do get more stuff now. It's not just the price of the bricks gone up, but you get more stuff, more and better Split Zone Duo, and we are very excited about it. Also, Richard, a note from us that the hurry up will be Sunday afternoon again this week because you've got travel home from Penn State.
Yeah, is there something going on at Penn State this weekend? I don't, they sent me, but I can't imagine.
What's Where are you staying?
In Williamsport.
Ooh, home of the Little League
because
World
I booked
Series.
It, Sad. Dude. I booked it in like September, honestly.
Yeah.
I booked
it in
September.
I'm
I was
impressed.
Like, you know what? Let me. Yeah. I booked it a long time ago. So yeah, staying. In
I stayed in a. I did a Penn State Michigan game in 17, and I had to stay in like a haunted bed and breakfast, like outside of Altoona. I mean, crazy ass weird place outside of Altoona, Pennsylvania. Just weird.
Altoona is an interesting place. I have fond feelings of Altoona. Got a good minor league baseball park with a roller coaster in the outfield. Did my 10th birthday
there. Yeah, but
this
was like 10 miles outside of there. I mean, it was.
I hear what you're saying. Oh, you might have been in like Du Bois. Who knows?
Scooby-Doo shit.
So, Steven, before we move on, before we talk about Michigan, you've got something you want to show the class. Something that you've been something you've been pursuing for a very long time.
If you are.
I have not.
While he gets it ready, Richard.
I'm ready.
If you are the listening audience, you'll just have to pause the podcast right now and head to the YouTube to actually see this, and I'm sure we'll post it on social as well.
Steven, are you going to wear that extremely tight UCF space jersey for the entirety of this recording?
Yes. It works, right? It works.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
You look like the high school quarterback.
Let's be honest. I look like the veteran punter that's brought in after there's a hamstring strain in like week 13 of the NFL, and they're like, is that guy 42? Oh, I remember him.
You are. You're Mitch
But
Berger.
I drop punts. So, like, look, I'm built. Yeah. I'm that guy. A little Polish looking, maybe, or something. Yeah.
I wouldn't say built different. I would say built the same. It's the problem.
You know, age similar. Great. If you're lucky.
You're built great. Thank you to UCF. Also, thank you to the people who usually provide Godfrey's outfits on the show. That's Home Field Apparel. Go to homefieldapparel.com. Use the promo code SCD20 for 20% off your first order. I got my Minnesota Golden Gopher hoodie on right now because I wanted to wear something sufficiently Big Ten so that I could be accused of treachery and bias when we discuss the next school that we are going to talk about here on Split Zone Duo. Richard, as I was beginning to mention before, though I was out of order, you have continued to advance this story at Michigan with your reporting. A couple weeks ago, you broke the story about the existence of a Michigan manifesto by Connor Stallions, the analyst at the center of all of this. And this week, you have advanced the story again by reporting, by breaking the news that has since become widely known and been used by all kinds of stakeholders in the story in various ways, that Michigan's signs were collected and distributed amongst several other Big Ten teams with an eye towards helping Purdue beat Michigan in the Big Ten championship last year. That didn't work. Didn't go very well, ultimately.
I
want to start by asking you this, because the story has moved on a little bit since you reported this on Monday or Tuesday of this week. How do you feel about the way that Michigan, Michigan fans, and everybody else are interpreting the reporting that you put into the world at Sports Illustrated?
I think media literacy needs to be taught in schools.
Tell me what you mean. Yeah.
I think that there's a lot of eye of the beholder here in a lot of what's going on. I don't worry and am not concerned with the random people on Twitter DMs that have DM'd me that said the story is fake, or IG DM'd me that the story is fake, or asked me who my source is.
How dare you, sir? I will speak to your manager.
Go blue.
I report with my colleagues, and we stand on business. We stand on our sourcing, and we stand on what we reported. In the science stealing story, the document is in the story,
right?
Like, it's not like we didn't We didn't Photoshop the document. It's literally in JPEG in the story. So it's just interesting. Like you have a story that goes out that, you know, however many thousands of people read. I will say this. The one thing that is the most interesting about reporting this level of story is how it gets aggregated. That's the one very odd thing, because that's the thing that you can't control. Because some people aggregate it by just retweeting the tweets, me or Pat's tweets or whoever's tweets, which, good. Other people's, like, take stuff and, like, add their own opinion.
Or they're selective about what they about, like, what they clip.
Yeah, it's like, it's weird. And that, like, and I'm not even saying they, like, do it in a nefarious, like, drive the narrative, whatever narrative they think way. Like, it just changes, it reframes the information is what it does. Whether good or bad.
I'm laughing because this, you know, is what I mean, Garfield? Like, it's all, like, our first jobs at Vox. Year, like a lot, right, ages ago.
It's just
ago.
Like it, yeah, reframes, I mean, the information.
There's entire, this used to be the way that you would drive page views, was just to aggregate actual reporting at places that you couldn't hire journalists to do it. I mean, I remember when, before I was a reporter at Vox, they had me on those desks, and that's what you do.
Yeah, it was my job too. Yeah.
I love the idea. So I've been there before where you get the death threat. I've been there before where you get called usually some homophobic slur. Like, I can kind of, well, I mean,
waiting on,
you,
waiting
you
on mine.
Fun racial stuff too. So it's like, I like, those are standard. And I sort of, when you do these kind of work, you expect that. The difference, like, Michigan, like, Ohio State fans will throw a slur at you. Like, you're rank and file, weightlifting, terrible Ohio State, stereotypical fan. Mississippi State fans found my parents' home address, right? Michigan fans will try to get you fired. Like, they're going to go to your manager, because it's not that they disagree with you. They so disagree with the idea of it even happening. It's not like I take umbrage with your reporting. It's that I take umbrage that you said that you even attempted to criticize Michigan.
I think the funny thing about dealing with, like, I think the funny thing about dealing with Michigan is, and I was talking to somebody, a Michigan source, who was like, yeah, the problem is we're all lawyers. And I was like, yeah, like, that's not my opinion. That was somebody who went to Michigan's opinion. And, like, we were just laughing about it on the phone, because we were talking about, like, the ingestion of the story and, like, all that sort of stuff. And, like, how it's been a wild one.
This is what I want to really ask about specifically, because Michigan fans are one thing. We all are on Twitter. We might get in arguments about this. But more, I think, pressingly, is that Michigan has drawn on this reporting in its response to the Big Ten, where the Big Ten kind of warned them that discipline might be coming. Michigan has a 10-page response saying, you better not do that. Part of Michigan's argument focuses on the stuff that you reported on. Godfrey, my question for you, how normal is it for football coaches to trade information, even significant information, about opponents? What Michigan refers to as collusion. And that certainly is one way that you could put this.
God.
Is
oh, I love
what
this so
Michigan
much.
Is doing is trying to muddy the water and say, hey, what we've done is not unprecedented, and so it does not deserve unprecedented
in my brain, like, all the time Michigan's for the doing. Past 5 weeks, there's like a sort of like techno music beat every time I discuss this scandal, because I can't get over the Schadenfreude. They are using a tactic. They have reversed a perfect 180 from the outrage that they had during player payment, you know, just pearl clutching 10 years ago. So they're trying to say, well, everyone does it, which is the exact thing that they decried that was ruining the sport. Damn it. sorry. I'll stay focused, Alex. It is ubiquitous to discuss other teams with other coaches. Okay. I use this example because I was
asked. Is it ubiquitous to share Signal information, as was done?
Okay. It's not.
Yes, but it's not like, it's it, like,
So, you just so here tell is them what the, here's like, the gray area where they're trying to live for this. Before we get to the specificity of the organization and generally just sort of the bizarre architecture of what Stallions did to an unnecessary end, because again, he wasn't gleaning the kind of state secrets that I think he thought he was. But anyway, Alex and Richard, you guys both come up as GAs together, and then you work on a staff at a lower level FCS or G5 school. Alex, Richard, you both go your separate ways. Let's just say you're both defensive coaches, all right? You're both in the Power Five, and you both happen to share an opponent. And the week or two that happens, did everyone see that? What the fuck is going on?
Just continue. YouTube audience will see that balloons just flew over your... No, it probably will. I don't understand what just happened.
Oh my
Someone
God,
is
leave
taunting.
It in. This show
just
is
continue, though, Rich.
Do we have Steven, a live audience?
No, we don't. I'm very confused about why balloons just crossed your screen in the middle of this video call. But let's say that Richard and I did come up together. Now we're both in the Big Ten. We've got a common opponent.
This might be my favorite episode ever because I can't even take a deep breath in this thing. It's killing. Okay. You would call up and say, "Hey, we've got so and so this week. What did you see when you played them? What did you think? You're gonna talk about tendencies. You're gonna talk about, oh, you know what, odd man fronts. They do this. Like, you know, we tried to run a lot of zone on them. They did this. Da 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 da. And then within sort of conversation about tendencies or what you saw, you will talk about like, hey, watch when they signal for X or da da. Yes. Now here's the difference. This is stuff that's available, which kind of leads me to Stallions, Alex, and this is where they're trying to muddy the water. I personally think this is all victimless, by the way. This is the greatest scandal in college football history because you're not dealing with economic or racial disparity or inequity. You're not dealing with a sexual assault victim. You're not dealing with anyone who's, I think, fundamentally hurt in this, except one crazy son of a bitch who just needed to touch grass or kiss a girl or whatever, who decided to go to the Naval Academy to draw the attention of Michigan football. You crazy, crazy white collar fuckers, dude. Like, these are the people that you inspire. I mean, like, the Southern Poverty Law Center should put you guys on the watch list, personally. That's what, you know, just throwing that out there. None of this, what I just talked about, can even be categorized as anything other than talking shop or trading notes. What Michigan wants you to do is to think that everything they did is as ubiquitous, but is it not the same subject matter? Now, where they have a leg to stand on, Alex, is I don't know what Stallions got out of all this.
Well, this is the interesting point, and I think this is so advantageous. A reasonable point that Michigan makes.
Yeah, I'll hand it off to you.
We are never going to know what advantage Michigan gained from this. I think it is naive to assume it was zero, but it is impossible to prove that it was significant. You are just never going to know.
They did not go 12-0 last year.
No, so because they had the so
now, all right, here's like the
a
thing
colleague.
About this,
right, no, hang on. A colleague of ours breaks a story yesterday that like they're doing digging everywhere right now. Any tangent connected to this, and like University of Illinois, turns out Stallions had purchased like three tickets or three different tickets to three different games, something like that. And so I'm first struck by why. Right. What in the world are you gleaning that you would need to secure that advantage over Illinois? I think what happens here is that in Stallion's mind, he starts to act compulsively in that, hey, I would do this for Ohio State or I do this for Georgia or TCU or, you know, some game of import. But then it's like, no, we need to do this all the time. We need to have as many advantages as possible. And this is where I guess like I sort of side with a rational Michigan fan of, why the fuck do we need to scout Illinois in advance? We've recruited and developed better than everybody.
Because,
better than them,
Godfrey, you know these guys.
Yeah.
They are competitors to the
you're taking
nth
me,
degree.
Yeah, you're taking me where
you,
I'm headed. Like,
listening to this podcast.
It still doesn't matter.
Right. You listen to this podcast, you cannot understand how competitive these people are. You may think you know. You may think you get it. You can't. They are, and it's not, hell, they're as competitive, the coaches at Central Michigan is probably a bad example. I'm sorry. They're as competitive as Eastern Michigan as they are at Michigan. They just don't have the same, but like these guys are in the positions they are in, coaches, GM, whatever, in this industry because they are hyper competitive. And if they think they have an edge, they will redline it to the nth degree. And I will say this, here's the thing. The more I have sort of reported on it since the manifesto thing or whatever, the more I lean probably rogue actor, rogue guy, more than I lean Jim called this
kid and personally said,
do this thing. It just doesn't, the more I dig into it, the more I learn about Jim, the more it like, I continue to get farther and farther away from the, and I don't care if you want to do the, oh, he should know because he's the head coach. I don't really care.
Well,
like,
well,
my reporting is my reporting.
You don't care, but I mean, this is specifically, so I just want to go back to this for a second. Yes, he definitely had knowledge of this. There's just no way to operate a coaching staff where you have this guy on the sideline. What's that?
I'm less sure than you are.
I am also less sure than you are. Harbaugh. I'm less sure than you are.
I think he should. I think it wouldn't be without precedent.
Okay,
it wouldn't be without precedent, Stephen. Hold on. It wouldn't be without precedent if next year when the NCAA wraps this up, I think I said this when the story broke. If the NCAA says, we don't give a shit if you knew or not, because that's how they do business, and it's not entirely unreasonable given the way that college football coaches present themselves as being in charge of their programs.
Sure.
I am less sure than you are about...
Proving it and it happening are two wildly different things.
I am getting there because of what I've sort of learned about Jim and how he runs the organization and how the organization.
Right, but head coach responsibility act is the head coach responsibility act. It was cheerleaded by Michigan specifically for years and years and years against coaches who were running payola schemes. So live by the sword and die by the sword.
Sure,
again,
yeah.
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't even know.
But I'm not playing rules ball right here. I'm going to be totally honest with you.
I don't think he should be suspended at all. I think it would be a disservice to the narrative of this season and next, because I think it would be absolutely hilarious if with no punishment whatsoever they eat the curb, because maybe there was an advantage in sign stealing that now they can't, or everyone's going to pull a TCU from here on out.
I will also tell you shortly why I lean towards the Big Ten probably shouldn't do something rash here. But before I do that, because in Godfrey, I hope you'll appreciate this, I want to point out what I think is a bad argument that Michigan is making off of Richard's reporting here. Because Richard reported it, and I got Richard right here, so he'll get to opine on whether this is a bad argument or not. Michigan fans have made the argument, and I will quote directly from a Michigan lawyer who I know is listening to this right now, who I like, who is a friend of our worlds, and who is smarter than me, which again is a problem with arguing with Michigan fans. He says to me yesterday—
No, it's actually pretty easy.
That the basis for using the Big Ten sportsmanship policy to make a punishment on Michigan, which is what the Big Ten is considering doing, is based on the assumption that what Michigan did is unique and beyond the pale. The fact that sign stealing is common and that other schools conspired to do it together against Michigan deflates that rationale. And there is some critical linkage missing there, which is why I asked you, is it ubiquitous? Is it common for coaches to trade information? Which is that what Michigan did was not standard operating procedure.
Correct.
You can even set aside rules ball because this is the sportsmanship policy. This is just, do we think this was unethical and wrong? Michigan is the one that did the thing. Someone at Michigan and a small network in Michigan did the thing that isn't normal and that is outside the bounds of not only an NCAA rule, but also what I think competitors in football would agree is acceptable norm. They didn't use the TV copies. They didn't use the All-22. There is no evidence being put forward that the Ohio States, that they deny involvement at all, that any other Big Ten schools that were gathering information together on Michigan signs got that information illegally. Michigan hasn't alleged that. In fact, Jim Harbaugh's lawyer, Tom Morris, Godfrey, hold for 1 second. I know you don't like the guy, says yesterday that because Michigan's opponents were getting Michigan signs legally, he used that word, that's the coach's lawyer, not the school's, then Jim had no reason to think that Michigan was getting them illegally. There is a ridiculous, to me, whataboutist effort going on at Michigan here.
Yeah, absolutely.
To compare two things that are not alike. And it's funny because the Big Ten coaches, you know, putting signs together, I guarantee that that is a more effective document than little stallions running out there with the iPhone cameras from a decent distance away.
Stallions is going to be somebody's fantasy football team next year.
But one behavior was abnormal and one behavior was normal. And also on the other side of at least one.
From a legal standpoint, so Alex, I would agree with all the Michigan.
The whataboutism is not compelling to me. I think there are very compelling Michigan arguments for why the Big Ten shouldn't touch them right now. I think they have some pretty good cases about that. But this one that Richard, that they used off of your reporting, I just find to be a ridiculous,
cosmically bullshit
argument.
I don't want to, like, okay, I'm going to hijack this for a second. Richard's, first off, Richard is on the front line of this. He's reporting. So I don't want to push him to on conjecture too much. By the way, I'm so glad I'm not reporting this. And I'm so glad I just get to roll around in the filth.
Do you know how mentally clear I felt yesterday
about Michigan?
Not thinking about the University of Michigan for like 24 hours.
I want to make something perfectly clear. There are terrible systemic problems with college football right now. We are on the cusp of changing the sport dramatically. We have run unchecked from a capitalist standpoint in the television takeover and ESPN sort of ESPN/Fox stranglehold. I can do the whole bit. Player compensation, NIL being sort of a Trojan horse, all these things. This is amazing, but it should not be treated seriously. All I am doing here is no. I am the Joker. I just want to set that pile of money on fire. Nothing should come of this. I would like it if the radio headsets came in, because NFL has them, high school has them. It's silly that we're doing this in the first place. Every coach I talk to is so sick of the boards and the eight guys in polos and all that kind of stuff. So let's just, that would be a good thing that comes, all right? This is only interesting to me because of the school that it happened to. In fact, I saw a piece, and I haven't read it yet, because right before we went to air, I think Feldman kind of went back and looked at WikiLeaks. And, you know, there's an interesting argument there of like, WikiLeaks sure didn't generate this kind of attention. Hey, guys, I'm not here for a noble pursuit. I'm here to roll around like those pandas at the zoo, holding my feet and giggling like a schoolgirl for as long as we can make Michigan eat the curb. And specifically, #not all, you know, there's some good ones, right? What I'm talking about are the people, the lawyers, Alex, that talk to you all the time, right? The people in the media, Richard, that we know, the colleagues who have carried this out for years and years and years, that there's a moral high ground that Michigan operates that the rest of college football could do to emulate. So I don't want to talk about this seriously. I think it's silly. I think it's stupid. No, I don't think he should be suspended. No, I can't really discern what violation there was. Maybe he didn't know.
Of the Big Ten policies? Sure.
I always tend to side on the fact that he had an awareness. Having been around coaching staffs and working with background sources for 20 years, I absolutely think he had an awareness, because I think all these guys have an awareness. But, dude, they couldn't nail Bill Self. They couldn't nail Hugh Freeze. They can't nail these guys. He's going to be fine.
I want to be clear, Stephen, you're talking about two different things, NCAA and Big Ten. NCAA
I'm defending Michigan.
But the immediate Big Ten is going to be more feckless.
Do you think the Big Ten is going to knock them out?
No.
Richard, explain this to him.
Richard, please explain this to him. Hold on a second.
Godfrey, he's got actually a pretty valid point here. Like, the thing that Michigan is arguing
I'm aware.
To the nail here is the Big Ten shouldn't
because everyone does it.
I'm sort of doing this for the audience.
Well, partially, but hold on.
No. Hold on a second. The Big Ten shouldn't do anything because the NCAA is investigating this. And NCAA investigations take a long time.
Correct.
The Big Ten shouldn't jump in line. Yeah. The Big Ten doesn't have an investigative force. And the Big Ten should follow the due process and let it go and not come out.
Yeah, I'm aware of all this.
Unprecedented for something that is not.
Yes, I'm aware of all this. What's the point?
Unprecedented.
I would do the exact same thing if I was Michigan. Look at enforcement's track record.
I think that Jim Harbaugh and Michigan are, when the NCAA gets around to this, going to have some degree of problem. But I don't think they care that much about that now because they're trying to win a national championship.
Wait, what? You think the same apparatus that is buckshot in creating the scarecrow that they so desperately want to is going to somehow tack Michigan to the wall?
Yeah, because it's... Yeah, man, because it's not that.
Steven, this one, on at least the one thing here, on at least the in-person scouting thing, which I agree is kind of an arcane rule, but like they got him, they got him,
What are they gonna do?
They got him.
I don't know, something. But
the head coach responsibility thing that we were talking about earlier, that applies to the NCAA.
So the head coach responsibility act applies to the NCAA. It is not a Big Ten.
What Michigan is doing this week is understandably trying to forestall that until the NCAA does what it does.
Which I totally would do something. Yeah. If I was Michigan, I would absolutely do that.
You call them buckshot, but they did get Michigan, and we all agree that it was kind of, it didn't matter because they were playing nobody.
How did they get
them? They got them to sit them down for 4 weeks.
What happened?
I mean, it ain't zero.
And then what happened?
Three.
He returned, but the NCAA didn't say what
they're out of conference games. What actually hurt them?
I'm aware. My point is, Stephen, that I think to assume that the NCAA will not successfully penalize Michigan in any way next year on this is
I don't think you believe that. It's a term of success. No, I'm litigating here with you the idea of success. How are you going to successfully hurt Michigan? They're not.
Yeah, but hold on. The effect of a suspension, that's not what I'm worried about here. It's not what I care about. Like it's literal. Are they going to render some punishment?
That's like specifically how will the mechanism function with relative to the NCAA's rules. The idea that this is going to stop, curtail, or change, or you know, hurt Michigan for doing wrong. No, come on, guys.
But Stephen, the reason to differentiate, I'm not saying that, not but the reason to differentiate that. The two tracks here is that the one thing is whatever the Big Ten thing is what everyone cares about more right now. Because
they
the Big
think
Ten
he's
could
get, like, pulled from the championship game or some shit.
No, but look, the Big Ten could, and I don't think they're gonna, but this could become outdated very soon. The Big Ten could hurt them in a way that the NCAA could not.
Yes,
I think the good argument for Michigan, the good argument for Michigan against the Big Ten doing something here is that the commissioner is being strong-armed. It's a political thing. He's being bullied by biased actors.
Yeah,
and you're rushing into it. And you might incurably harm the players on the 2023 team by lessening or denying their chance at the championship. That's a great argument, honestly. And I think it's probably going to win. The bad argument is that our very novel and sophisticated cheating operation that is clearly against the rules is the same as our opponents sharing signs about us.
Which,
like, shut the
fuck up. Hey,
like,
but that's all I'm here for. I'm serious. So Viannini had the tweet yesterday, and I got to find it really fast because it is the quintessential summation of this. Whatever happens, I hope Tony Petitti appreciates how completely Big Ten this whole Michigan controversy is. The conference's history is full of Michigan accusing everyone else of cheating, which we all look professionally. We all in the industry, we know this. It is a fact. It's not an I think or I feel. It's an I know. I know Michigan's dimed out people to enforcement in and outside of the Big Ten for years. So anyways, accusing everyone else of cheating, investigating it themselves, getting everyone else mad at them and turning it around. All I care about is the schadenfreude and the irony. I don't care about anything else. Nothing's going to happen. They're probably going to make the playoff. And look, they're going to fart it out in some new and interesting way. Remember Run the Damn Ball, and then they played Georgia of all teams? Talk about an unfortunate t-shirt. Richard was there. Remember last year? Remember the year?
Big 10 to the Big 12.
The tiny little TCU team that couldn't handle that? Like, there's no way they could line up against Michigan. What's it going to be this year? I can't fucking wait.
We will get to this in a second when we talk about the actual game against Penn State. We'll get to the football of it all in a second here, because that is in and of itself very interesting. Yes, funny that, by the way, let's say Tony Petitti suspends him for the next 3 weeks or 2 weeks or whatever. Michigan actually did practice for this earlier in the season.
Yeah, that'll be fine.
When we talked about how they rotated four different guys in three games to have head coaching responsibility. So in a very, very ironic way, they have practiced for this reality earlier in the season. It obviously would just be different stakes because it's Bowling Green. It's Ohio State and Penn State this reality in Maryland.
Maryland. Where it's our time, anyway, baby. It's our time.
But the other thing here is, and I think this is also in a small way a commentary of, hey, maybe this is why you don't hire a TV executive to run sports league. Because I'm saying, like, I don't think it's the biggest deal, but I do think it's part and parcel of what we're dealing with here. Like,
do you think he's missed that?
What training are you? Yeah, dude, are y'all seeing this?
There's things going on off the screen while we're recording.
Do y'all think Sankey would fare better in this situation?
The genius.
I do not want to do this. Like, Sankey
a day
thing.
With
dude,
the genius.
Everyone here agrees with you. Everyone here agrees with you that.
No, but I'm asking
Greg it,
Richard.
Sankey
you're saying it's said not a television executive. Then what background would you have?
My question is, Tony Petitti hasn't done anything yet.
Yeah,
So I don't want to all the way render that.
But I'm asking,
he hasn't done
what background
yet.
Would you? What I would background like to would, wait until the thing. Prepare you for this completely fucking stupid situation.
Sports administrator with a pretty deep acknowledgement and an understanding of, hey man, or at least college sports, like, hey man,
yeah.
And I'm talking to like him.
But I'm sure Patini has. He has those people. Like, he has.
Listen,
those
to you guys complain. Hold on a second. Hold on a second. Hey, I'm listening to you guys complain. You're all complaining. Here's the deal, guys. I wouldn't jump a due process for any of you, Ohio State, Michigan State, Penn State, Rutgers, Minnesota, whoever's complaining. I wouldn't jump a due process for you. Real leadership is I'm not going to jump a due process for this, even though you guys think it's unprecedented because they're the number one team in the country. Because if they were going to go 7-5, obviously we all know this would not be that big a deal. So like Tony Petitti has an opportunity, in my opinion, to sit here and like put a stamp down and say, hey, like, you guys can complain all you want, but like, I run the league here. I run the show here. We're going to do business a certain way. And you set a precedent, You set a precedent as well for how this league is going to change
work for?
On July 1st.
Who does old boy work for?
Its membership.
14 people.
And if you look, and if you, and if that's leadership, if you end up getting crushed for it and you end up losing your job for it, like, okay, at the end of the day, but if you've got morals and you want to stand on business, then
these
stand
conference
on
commissioners
way.
Are not they're not
then
brought to be leaders.
Way.
They're brought to negotiate on behalf of the consortium.
No,
and
but look,
95%
of the consortium,
when 95% of the consortium is angry about something, you're going to kowtow to them for at least a little bit. I think he's fine. Maybe. I think he's in a rock and a hard place. But I don't necessarily think another individual would fare much better in this situation. Which is why this is so funny. Again, this is the greatest scandal ever. There are no victims. And I can't stop. This is so fantastic.
There are no victims. I don't think that anyone at Michigan should pretend to be one, despite
well, the cases good fucking they have. Luck convincing them of that.
But by the way, look, you know who, Godfrey, this is your world. Last thing I'll say on it, Ric Flair was in the building for a photo op with Jim Harbaugh on Monday. Yeah. You're not a victim. And you know it too, because Jim knows what he's doing. Like, come on.
Yeah. So wait, what's your point? Wait, what's the point?
Jim knows he's not a victim. They know they're not victims. You don't have to pretend Michigan
Alex, are you implying that rich white people are not going to adopt an aggrieved stance when something doesn't go their way?
You know, that's a great question. And I have no idea, Stephen.
I want this to go on forever. I love this so much.
They do play Penn State tomorrow.
Football.
Saturday. They Penn State Saturday. Sorry. I don't know up from down this week. I got home from DC at like midnight last night. I'm going to Penn State. They play Penn State on Saturday. It is absolutely fascinating that under the, I don't even know if it's the undercurrent, the side current, the parallel current, the other current is that preseason is finally over for Michigan. And they get to play a team, at least on one side of the ball, not just with a pulse, but a team that is really stinking good. And I did part of the Substack episode that I recently did this week on the Substack feed talked about Michigan's defense and Penn State's defense and what those two teams bring to the table. Because obviously Penn State will be the best. Penn State's going to be the best defense that they face. You can quibble about whether they're better defense than Ohio State. I think they are. Whatever. And I know what the result was against Ohio State, but Ohio State has a certain thing that wears a number 18 jersey that makes them very different from pretty much any other football team and was the reason they were able to rise above and score the amount of points that they did. I think the game plan, frankly, probably will be the same, roughly, on defense for Penn State in this game. Michigan's wide receivers, I know a lot of Michigan fans think their wide receivers
you
are pretty
Marvin.
Good.
You ain't Marvin.
They're good. Is it right? They're good. Are they is it the best wide receiver room?
No.
In the conference? No. Is it the best
Kalen
wide receiver
King
in the country? No.
Had a horrible day against Marvin Harrison Jr. Like a horrible, no good, very bad day. The great cornerback for Penn State. And like, I think he has a better chance of not doing that against Roman Wilson or Cornelius Johnson or whoever.
Right. Like, guess what, man? Darius Slay may have a bad time with Marvin Harrison Jr. next October. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's going to be like Trevon Diggs may have a hard time with Marvin Harrison Jr. next October. Like the guy is what he is. It's common stuff. How JJ McCarthy is going to respond to pressure when he finally gets it. Michigan's plan B And what if the plan B isn't effective is going to be interesting. I mean, look, the place is going to be absolutely rabid.
Happy Valley.
Like on Saturday, even though it's a noon game.
They get up. They get up for the
morning. It's at Penn State.
That's totally legit. Absolutely.
But then on the other hand, that Penn State offense, man.
Well, what do you make of that? What I'm interested in is,
I mean, dude, yes. They got their head caved in
and
last year
against Ohio State. Look, at the end of the day, somebody needs to make a play. A receiver, a quarterback needs to make a play. At the very end of the Indiana game, Keandre Lambert-Smith got one. They had a bonanza against a completely out of it Maryland team last week. Everyone got in on the act. That was great. Against Ohio State, the entire day went by and nobody on that offense made a play. Somebody will have to do that in this game. Like, you are going to need some explosive plays to beat Michigan. You're going to need someone to do something impressive. Like, but you don't have Jahan Dotson or Parker Washington or whoever. Someone needs to do an impression for a little bit on Saturday afternoon.
I mean, look, today, Saturday is the day Drew Aller can become president. Like, I am also very, very interested in getting the full JJ, because by the way, we've talked a lot about Michael Penix this whole season, as far as Heisman-ness and that, understandable. I think people are way underselling the JJ McCarthy of it all, in that, let's say JJ McCarthy comes out and throws for 310 and two touches on Saturday, and then does a similar thing against Ohio State. You know who's winning the Heisman in that case? It ain't probably Michael Penix.
Yeah.
So JJ McCarthy has his own opportunity here to put a big legitimate stamp and win this game, because I'm not going to say Michigan's not going to run the ball on Penn State. Obviously, that's like what they're going to be able to do. They have a great offensive line and they will do it anyway, pretty much. But there's an opportunity here if Penn State does blitz ball, which I expect them to do. JJ McCarthy, diagnose, absorb, kill them anyway. Like, you have the opportunity, JJ, to really firmly stand up and plant your
flag.
What
is the minimum stat line for this breakout that you're talking about, where we're pushing him into New York and he's neck and neck, or probably leading Penix, just because there's going to be a geographic bias if that happens?
Sure. And that's what I'm playing at. You know, you come out here and, like, it's funny because, like, they may not be deep passes. They may end up just being, like, catch and run stuff because, you know, slant breaks and he goes. So stats are stats. You know, if he has a bomb or two that connect, I think you see it. I think there's a narrative arc too that you can say that, like, okay, let's say he throws for like 245. But let's say they're down four and he's got the ball and there's one possession left and he drives them down to score. Like, you know how, like, narrative ball plays into the Heisman stuff too, especially with a Michigan quarterback like him. Yes. And look, he is very efficient. He is pretty accurate. I think that some of his accuracy concerns come from the fact that and we talked about this a couple weeks ago when we sort of diagnosed Michigan in depth, like, the dude, like, only throws fastballs. It's pretty awesome, actually. But that can cause some accuracy concerns because he's really throwing his whole back into it when he delivers the ball.
I would love to buy into this being a great game. I would love. Yes, I do too.
I think Michigan's going
to
win this
game.
But
I would love to buy into this being a great close game. Again, just something that's going to hold our attention for four quarters in that morning slot. What evidence is there that Aller and that offense coming off of Ohio State can give me four quarters of suspense?
There's none, but
I'm just asking, you guys do the hurry up. Like, I'm the one who doesn't watch the games allegedly. So, like, I don't know why I know why it's being hyped. I get it. It's records. I understand. I get all that. Right. And it's just obviously the aforementioned week that Michigan's having. Why do we think this is going to be close?
Because
there is something to be said for, though, that, like, the stakes change because of the level opponent. And look, Michigan, as stated multiple times on the show, Michigan has done the thing to the crap schedule that you have to do for me to take you seriously against that crap schedule, which is absolutely decapitated
That's my game point. I'm looking at Penn State's formidability here, and I don't see it.
Defense, man. It's defense. Yeah. I mean, that front is totally as good a defensive front as exists. Totally, I mean, they don't have a Chris Jenkins in the middle of the line, but the other guys, they're really good. Yeah.
Totally get that. Defensive led outfit, absolutely. And what's funny is if you were to somehow clip and only show Penn State's defensive efforts against Ohio State and like almost like as a blind sample to someone, you'd be like, oh man, they probably won that game, right? Like, but again, it's Michigan's defense and the anemia of that Penn State pass. Look,
you need a surprise.
I know, that whoever that kid was, or maybe he's not a kid, maybe he's a man, that Franklin decided to like just verbally beat the shit out of about the Drew Aller deep passing stuff.
Oh, veteran reporter Corey Geiger had been covering.
Yeah, okay, so I know. We might leave this game head into the season and realize that old Corey, maybe he conflated some terms or something like that. Which, by the way, as the media, it's not our job to have a graduate degree in college football schematics. He wasn't wrong.
James,
I tweeted that during the Ohio State game. I was like,
no, my
James,
God, like
James,
I had
James responded pretty weirdly to that, in my opinion, for the $10 million a year coach to be like, you just made the most insane question I've ever heard.
He does
in my
like,
life
he,
for asking
he, dude,
if we
he
would throw the ball
on that. Like he beats on that press corps. I've had a relationship with Franklin for a long time, going back to Vanderbilt. I'll gladly take his text or phone call if he wants to respond to this. He's rough on local media. He's rough. And Penn State has a huge local media base. And it's in that sort of like Knoxville, Tennessee situation where there just ain't nothing going on, where a lot of Central PA's, this is Central PA's pro team. So like Philly media will cycle you. Pittsburgh media will cycle you. You know this, Alex. Like I think he gets to a point where he's on top of that little fiefdom and he doesn't realize how much of a, maybe he does realize how much of a dick he's being.
No. And Penn State media do not, he doesn't get the same treatment there that like Dabo gets sometimes, for instance. Like they'll tell
no,
him, like,
no.
They are aware that he has not won a game of note since like, well, he won the Rose Bowl last year, but you know what I'm talking about. I'm talking about against the two teams that they measure themselves against.
Yeah.
That he hasn't won one of note against them, against a good one of them. I'm qualifying this a lot, but every Penn State fan agrees, hasn't won one of those games in 7 years. Like 2016 Ohio State was the last time, and they are aware of it. And the entire fan base is aware of it.
He's going to lose this game this weekend and then be the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals. Is that what we're saying?
That's exactly it. You heard it here first on Splits and Duo. Richard, that was the unofficial start to the Week 11. You know what? What's it time for? We've already, of course, had some Tuesday and Wednesday night action. I also need to make some hurry-up corrections this week because I did two silly things here. I apologize to the Dakotas and the Montanas. I said that the Dakota marker game last week was played in Billings, conspicuously not in Montana. It was played in Brookings. Also, I said that Oklahoma State won two in a row against Oklahoma. Incorrect. Right. It was
typical culture. The typical cultural insensitivity that I've come to expect from Alex.
That's right. Can't believe you did it. It's the worst, most egregious.
On Thursday night, we've ever made. Your choices are UVA Louisville and Southern Miss Louisiana. Louisville possibly moves into the top 10 if they can just win this game against a bad team. For Louisiana, rough loss to Arkansas State last week. That's playing against Southern Miss. Now, I think that they would very much like to avoid the kind of loss now that would kind of imply that Michael Desermo is like losing the plot a little bit. Not saying anything more than that, but just...
Correct.
This would be like your season's really taking a turn if Louisiana cannot beat Southern Miss.
And Southern Miss for having a bad season is not showing the sort of correlating effort issues that you would see when things fall apart, which is again, another testament to why I think Hall will be fine.
Friday night, North Texas at SMU. That's going to have points. You like points? Great. That's going to have points. I think
like
the best
points?
Game of the night
like
is at 9:45 God's time. That's Central Time. Wyoming at UNLV. Winner stays alive for the Mountain West, basically.
Yeah.
Surprisingly fun matchup. I think if you would have assessed these teams at the beginning of the year, UNLV is a little bit inside a touchdown favorite. Really, really good offense. We've talked about them a lot. I think very highly of them. I think their quarterback, Jaden Maiava, who's come in as the backup after Doug Brumfield got hurt and really shined, has been great.
Yeah.
I think Barry Odom's done a good job there. I think highly. I am partial to their offensive coordinator, Brendan Marion, because he's from Pittsburgh, and I met him when I lived in D.C., and I just think he's a good coordinator. I root for his success. I think they're a good team. I like watching them play.
Yeah, good rule of thumb on this game is that you have a styles clash, and I think in this instance you'll be able to sort of dictate the eventual winner depending on whose style are we playing in for most of this game. UNLV is going to want to do something that's fast and tempo oriented. Wyoming's not built to compete with that, nor is the reverse. The reverse is true as well, in that UNLV does not want to get physical and plod and play a possession game. So whoever really dictates style, I think will win this game. And also styles clashes are usually pretty fun to watch. This would be a good game if you're just, it's late. What time is the kick?
9:45.
Yeah. Fall asleep to it.
Late, yeah. Of note, we mentioned this. Obviously, we talked about Michigan-Penn State, obviously, because it's a noon game, but moving to Saturday early. That is also Minority Coordinator of the Week in an interesting schematic spot. Times two, Minority Coordinator of the Week is not a predictor or a pretender of schematic success. It's simply taking a minority coach in a certain schematic spot and saying, huh, that's interesting. That's Manny Diaz with Penn State's defense and Sharon Moore from Michigan's offense. Sharon Moore is somebody who's, I think, kind of a pencil-in future head coach candidate. And obviously, Manny Diaz had his day at Miami. We can quibble about how it ended.
Yeah. Excited for half of South Florida to tweet you that he's white, by the way. Enjoy that.
Baseball fans, you heard Manny Diaz's name. Maybe you're thinking the same thing I'm thinking. A couple years ago, Manny Diaz was treated by Miami in a way that I've never seen a coach be treated by a college football program ever, which is that they basically just left him twisting in the wind while all but announcing to the world in the press release
while
that they
were trying
to
hire
Mario Cristobal to take a shot. While
he was recruiting.
The Chicago Cubs did this week. Very big time.
Yeah,
absolutely.
They did.
Yeah.
Really?
They went.
David Ross, dude. David Ross,
one of the good
dudes in baseball, too.
I don't know about his character. He might be fine, but he was a beloved member of their World Series team. He had been their manager for a little while.
And they
went and fished out Craig Counsell, who had been the Brewers manager, and just like hired him. I'm not sure if they announced it before they announced they fired Ross. Point is, they were like, we want someone other than you, and we are going to go and get him and throw you out of here. So he got many.
Cubbies are desperate for to perennially get kicked out in the first round, I guess.
Dude, I hate those guys. I absolutely hate those guys.
Really? You're anti-Cub?
Not enough time of the day. Not enough time of the day. I'm a Pirates fan.
Spend some time with us.
Alabama and Kentucky.
Jesus.
I am not going to totally disregard Kentucky here.
Stop it.
Don't.
Can I tell you why not to totally disregard them?
Don't make me get the spray bottle out.
The reason not to totally disregard them is that they defend the run pretty well.
Nope.
And so that okay, I'm moving on. Fine. Saturday middle slate. James Madison hosts UConn. Let us discuss recent developments on that team's front. Jalen Green, the national sack leader, is out for the year for James Madison. That sucks. They're still going to beat UConn, but that sucks.
Deal.
And that changes
why are they going to beat
some
UConn?
Things about them. What did you think I said?
Why are they going to beat UConn?
it's a great question.
Is that
question.
Coach bad? Is that coach not good? Is he not good?
On James Madison's front, what I'm interested in is that they are really going to the mat. They're trying to do like what North Carolina did with Tez Walker and his eligibility. They've said that. They saw that case. And they realized that repeatedly asking, they're acting
they
like
really said,
like we saw how the NCAA responds to pressure, so we're going to keep pressuring.
Yeah.
The party that I do not want to let off the hook here, though, is the Sun Belt. Because
the
NCAA is an
you,
easy,
way.
Big, bad yeah. villain. Like, who likes the NCAA? Nobody. But the Sun Belt, soft and fuzzy, cuddly. Who doesn't love the Sun Belt? We talk about how we love the way they've done realignment. It's a really fun Group of Five conference, really fun conference period. The Sun Belt could let them into the championship game with, my understanding now, is no consequence from the NCAA, and it's just a question of worrying about a bowl slot being denied to the conference if they don't arrange their teams right. Figure it out, Sun Belt.
Like, wait.
Big boy pants.
Pause. Are you guys advocating for a conference commissioner to act recklessly?
No. I think it's not reckless, though.
It sounds like we're just encouraging these conferences to do whatever they want. That wouldn't be fair.
Different apples, oranges. Although I like what you're trying to do. Arizona at
you.
Colorado.
No.
Very
we don't have to do this
likely.
Every week.
Who said we're doing it for Colorado? We're doing it for Arizona.
Hold on, Alex,
sometimes life is blurry. It's very blurry for me right now. Alex and I discussed this on the phone this week about
Oh, okay.
We don't have to do this. Actually, we don't have to do this. Part one is, yes, we don't have to play the Colorado game every week, but not the actual game. Number two is, Jed Fish is doing a good job, full stop, right? Jed Fish has done a good job. The floor has been raised at Arizona to a respectable level. I think I've done this long enough now to see multiple coaches do this at Arizona on a temporary basis before the slide begins anew. And I think that's what I'm trying to avoid, where there's a rally year where things look respectable, and then there's just enough of an ease, not like a roller coaster drop or anything following that. Like, go look it up. And then you have like, and then you look up a couple years later and like, oh shit, they're 2-10 again. So I
sure.
Frankly, in Arizona State, pretty much in the same spot.
Yeah, but it's way funner over there.
They just haven't done it yet.
They're going to hit the wall at 80 miles an hour, yeah. Like, you know, Herm. Like, it's no, I just, we don't have to do this thing on a rotation.
We're not doing it.
Like, is Arizona back? Like, back to what?
We're not doing that. All we're saying is this is a chance for a really good offense, a fun offense to play a team that doesn't know how to play defense. It could be fun. Like, Jonah Coleman and the fellas are going to run for, I don't know what the number of yards will be, but my estimate would be high.
Free Sean Lewis.
Tennessee Mizzou, by the way. Curious one here. Mizzou obviously acquitted themselves in front of Alex and the rest of the country on Saturday in Athens.
Yeah.
Tennessee. So I have this thing with Tennessee where it's like, dude, eventually,
they aren't hitting.
Passes are going to hit.
Mm-hmm. They're not hitting, though. They haven't hit this week.
Well, it's a low probability play, but they don't really fucking care about that. So you got to give them credit for that.
Like, eventually, the deep passes are going to hit. It could be this week. They play Georgia next week. It could be next week. Eventually, they're going to hit, and it's going to go boom.
Richard,
I don't know when.
I was thinking about this actually this morning for some reason. Oh, it's because I live here. They could have like a totally normal technical like regression season from last year if they win these last couple games, and Heupel will have installed a sense of like raised floor, better expectation, et cetera. Like they could have a quiet 23 with a quarterback who's not as good, but still be in like really nice shape. And none of what I'm saying sounds remarkable. If it doesn't, it's because you don't have familiarity. With the pure volatility of this program. And like, I don't know.
Yes.
I was very critical of the hire. And now I'm thinking like, God, this guy has instilled a sense of like, it's kind of steady calm at a program that hasn't had it in so long. It's crazy. And with that style of offense too, that's fascinating. And I really think it like, if you want to get excited, you go out and find a right quarterback in the offseason, or at least one that has a little bit wider of a skill set. And they're going to be right back annoying the shit out of people sort of knocking on the national door. That, if you're a Vol fan, you should be over the moon. It's not, that's what I'm saying. It's like they're not, they didn't fall to pieces. I'm shocked.
Right. Utah and Washington.
Can I pose a question?
Is anybody,
pose a question to you.
Go for it, because I want to look
up
the line.
Is there a good reason why Utah could not do to this team what it did to USC?
No.
And we're all aware of the Oregon thing that happened intermittently. Like the shine is to some extent off of Utah as a total giant killer this year. But USC and Washington, saw last week, are similarly situated teams. The thing is that Washington's defense is better. It is not the disaster site that USC's is, but they can still give up some points. They can still get into some track meets.
But not the same way, though, is my assumption is that just real fast, because Alex, you said something that I really want to harp on. I do really like how Dan Lanning finds like a schematic stereotype of a team and then adopts it for the week, and then they out whatever you like against Washington. They came very close to sort of out, you know, explosive playing them. And then like, I was watching this video of them that I guess Oregon put out of like, all right, what's the reputation of Utah? And the kids like yell it back to him, like physical, hard, all this stuff. And like, they went out and played Utah the exact same way. That's a sign of a really fucking good coach. I think the difference, Alex, is I don't know if Utah equipped offensively to press on Washington, and you don't have the same, as you've already mentioned, lack of capacity on defense. They should be fine, but I also am growing more and more suspicious by the week of Washington, who I want so desperately, just for narrative's sake, to break through or Oregon.
We'll see. I'm not going to disregard Utah in it, despite what happened against Oregon.
This podcast loves and appreciates Utah at every step, including when they have multiple losses. This podcast officially does not disrespect or ignore the Utes anymore.
Completely concur. Miami at FSU. I don't know that we're ever going to figure out Miami, but my
dude,
quarterback thing is not weird. What is it not there right now? Quarterback thing is really.
It's not a developmental success story.
Oh, Richard, you were right. I was going over notes when I was on the plane this week about just trying to catch up on things, and you called it like mid last year that we were building an endorsement of Tyler Van Dyke as a sort of like top level echelon guy, and you were like, nah, like just you gotta wait on that. He has not had now any period of consistency to earn that.
Yeah, it's something's going on. I don't know if they're gonna start Van Dyke.
Did any of us expect this kind of Miami identity under Cristobal?
No, because I think what like the identity is like
dumb,
not formed yet. Is
on field
problem.
It's dumb. It's dumb.
Weird.
Georgia Tech game notwithstanding.
The thing here though with Miami is like, as we all know though, like Miami can treat this game as the Super Bowl,
yes,
and get up for it. Like there are like it's. In a very weird way, Florida State-Miami is a rivalry where, especially as Miami has been so not so good the last, 15 years, Miami can come into this game and, like, drink Popeye's spinach for this game and then nothing else. And often not for the rest of the season after this game, but for just this day. I know that Florida State's got the wide receivers that are hurt, Johnny Wilson and Keon Coleman. There is, some question about if they're going to play or if they're going to be at 100%. I don't think he's out, but I think there's a question about how 100% he is. So it's by
Mario needs a head coach. I think Mario needs a head coach, Alex. I think he needs a veteran dude to be out there when shit is happening in real time. That's my new stance.
Sure. Good special teams in this game. Both teams, some good kickers, punters, returners. Maybe the game moves on that. We'll see. UCF, Oklahoma State. Godfrey, I mean, I see your UCF jersey. You're wearing
it.
Let's
go, baby.
Are you excited?
Oh, I'm so excited. As a longtime Knights fan and constant endorser of the educational quality of the University of Central Florida, my beautiful Knights. God, this thing is killing my ribs. I am completely, I have total faith that they will catch a still celebrating Okie State coming off of an ironical bedlam finish and take care of business, boys.
Which, by the way, can happen, and Oklahoma State can still go to the Big 12 championship game. Oklahoma State can lose one of these last three games and still go.
And shout out to John Rhys Plumlee and the Brandon Moms group text. Thank you, Bunky.
Texas State at Coastal Carolina as your Sun Belt drink freshener for this window. Coastal trying to stay ahead of the pack to be the recipient of some goodwill if James Madison does not get into the Sun Belt championship game, which is one way. It's how they got into the conference championship game last year. They could do it 2 years in a row as sort of the alternate because of bureaucracy. So that's very inspiring. Also, still a possible, though low chance for Troy in the West. They are back of Troy, and Troy has that tiebreaker, but interesting game. And to see Texas State attempt to pile up wins could be deeply enjoyable. It's on the Teal Field, quintessentially college football. Saturday late, Ole Miss, Georgia. Richard, can I hit you with a theory of the case on this one? Okay.
Oh boy.
Was that nice?
Let me have it.
But Georgia's gonna win the game. Yada yada. I liked a lot Mizzou's plan against Georgia last weekend. Talked about it briefly on Sunday, but they saw the teeth of the Georgia defense. Really good interior defensive line. Smail Munden roving around. The two great safeties, Javon Bullard and Malachi Starks. And they decided we are going to put the ball in places where it is harder for those players to get us. So Cody Schrader, stretch runs to the sideline. Theo Weiss, Luther Burden, back shoulder throws down the sidelines. A little harder for the safeties to disrupt. They scored 21 points, and they had a couple of chances to finish some drives to get another first down or two, not throw a pick, and maybe score more. And they were in that game until almost the very end. Ole Miss has the personnel to do something similar, right? Like,
remember, no yep. Dumas Johnson for Georgia, but maybe 70%-ish Brock Bowers. Brock Bowers had the tightrope surgery. This will be, I believe, his last rush game back. At Sanford Stadium.
No, pro.
He's not a... No, but the thing is, the tightrope surgery is the thing you can rush back from. Like, that's the thing. The tightrope surgery is the thing that they do so that there's no structural, like, there's not a structural issue, effectively, with the high ankle, as I understand it. I'm not a doctor. I just play one on TV. So we'll see. I mean, would you take 70% of Brock Bowers? Hell yeah, you probably would. I mean, Oscar Delp is a capable backup, but like, would I run some Brock Bowers out there for 30 snaps? Probably.
Find out. Interesting. Yeah.
Ole Miss is not going to win this game. If they do, I think I got a mea culpa coming.
Sure.
Why?
And as Steven says that, again, everyone who's going to be listening to this on the audio,
I don't know if this is going
to
show up in the YouTube feed, but inexplicably,
there have been
all day long as we've recorded.
I hope it does.
There have been super weird, like, emojis, I guess, showing up on our camera feeds.
It's like Zoom reaction. If you're on a Zoom meeting,
is one of you just been doing it for like Zoom a bit on the show?
No, my hands are clean.
I'm not doing
it. It's so weird. And it happens. It's happened with such great timing.
And I don't know if the raw.
Yeah,
I don't know if the raw files are gonna show it.
Yeah,
on YouTube.
I think we've reached a point in this show's existence, and I'm not kidding. Where like when shit gets completely squirrely technically, it's actually funnier just to bring the audience in on it. I don't think they're gonna win this game.
Of course.
I don't think the defense is going to be able to hold serve. If I'm wrong.
USC, speaking of defenses that are not going to be able to hold serve, at Oregon.
Hang on. If I'm wrong, I just want to say, we do have a lot of Ole Miss fans listening. If I'm wrong and they end up in the catbird seat for the West coming out of this, I will bring this back to a show topic from a schematic standpoint from you guys. Because I feel like I have like sort of color blindness, inability to sort of judge them accurately. We've done the alma mater bit for so long. But I think they're going to lose. I'm sorry, Alex.
Catbird seat. What's the catbird seat? What is that?
It's like an ideal place to see.
But they can't win the West. Alabama, I think, if they didn't clinch it, it's basically clinched.
Bama would still have to lose,
Twice.
Yes.
Bama would have to lose twice.
Once. Twice.
No, twice.
Wait.
Yep, twice. Yeah. Bama would have to lose twice.
Oh, yeah, Bama's going to lose. It's fine. But they could be. They could try and mount some playoff campaign, blah, 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 blah.
Sure. USC at Oregon. A shame how much this is not a premium game because of the crimes, the malfeasance of the USC defensive staff, specifically Alex Grinch. I do think it's an interesting chance to see what the new co-coordinator, Sean Nua and Brian Odom, can do. Kind of experimental. Like, as we talked about, they have a personnel issue as well. They have not recruited that well on defense. But, man, would it look bad for Alex Grinch if these two guys put together a defense that keeps Oregon anywhere under, like, 36 in this game. Like, if Oregon only scores like 30, 35 points, that will be legitimately USC's best defensive performance of the entire season.
But there's also a standpoint here from Oregon. Like, it's at Autzen, obviously. There's a standpoint for Oregon to say, like, we're taking care of business here. Like, it doesn't matter. You know what I mean? Like, it's like we're taking care of business. I'm not saying they're going to Colorado them, but like, fly around. Like, you have a similar, like, flair opponent, right? You have a similar sexy opponent. Not Colorado. Definitely not Colorado in week 3. But you have a similarly shiny thing.
That's what
and break it.
Yeah. Sorry, that was my analysis. But yeah, no, I completely agree. it is weird that we're still talking about all of these individually compelling conference games in this league. This late into the season, like there's still more yet to come. It's kind of shocking. I do really like what Oregon's becoming. He's better at this in every way than Mario was out there. And Willy, we'll of course.
We'll see. Probably. Yeah, better early returns.
I don't know. I'm probably going to curse him now, but yeah, I've just been really impressed.
The full list of teams that could get bowl eligible this weekend. It is that time of year. Georgia Tech, Clemson.
Jeez.
Iowa State.
Sorry. This keeps getting weirder. Sorry, keep going, Alex.
Georgia Tech, Clemson, Iowa State, BYU, Maryland, Minnesota, Nebraska. I think that would mean a lot to them. Wisconsin, Western Kentucky, Bowling Green, Central Michigan, Florida, Texas A&M, Auburn, App State, Arkansas State. Think it would mean a lot to them. Louisiana. The two or three in there for whom bowl eligibility would be, wow, big, good achievement. Arkansas State, Nebraska. Been a minute for both of them.
Yeah.
So Godspeed to them, except for, I guess, Nebraska. Playing against my school. Shouldn't root for you. But Nebraska, you're not going to need much luck. You'll be fine.
Nebraska, coming to the Music City Bowl. Drink the town dry. I'll go out and hang out with y'all. Would love it.